Good afternoon, Mood Group friends, and welcome back to the Mood Group podcast, Packaging Perspectives. Today, I would like to introduce you to Amit Radia, who is the founder and CEO of Atlas Media Group. Amit and I have been friends, I was working out the other day, for over 20 years now. And we recently had a great opportunity to catch up at Gulf Print and Pack in Riyadh, and Amit was bringing me up and making me more abreast of the current developments of Atlas. And upon reflection, I thought, you know, we really should get together and have a little chat about what you find to be the sort of secret ingredients to your success, and where you came from, and what your views are on people entering our industry, and also how you got into printing and packaging of it. So for people listening to the podcast, please can I remind you that to ensure that you get future episodes as well, please hit the subscribe button, and if you're interested in participating, please apply through the guest button. So without further ado, good afternoon, Amit. I know I'm speaking to you in Dubai today, I believe, where you're headquartered. How are you?
I'm good, Marcus. Thanks very much for inviting me to this.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. I think the first sort of burning question everybody's got, I mean, anyone who knows about the success of your group must look from outside and say, how did he do it? Where did the idea come from? Where was the inspiration? How did you do it? What were the early stage things that you learned as you went along? I've got a rough idea, but it's far, far better to hear it directly from the founder. So what gave you the idea? Why did you go into printing and packaging? And why Atlas Printing Press, which is now over 31 years old, I think?
Yes, it is. It's just coming up to that. So how long have we got? Because it's a long history. when you say, how did I get into this? It's I'll give you a little bit of a history background first as to how I find it, and then slowly lead you through how it all evolved. Basically, I'm originally from, I was born and brought up in Kenya, in East Africa, and in the 60s, when Kenya was still a colonial country. And my grandfather was in the printing business in the 40s, after the Second World War. So as a kid, and he had a printing press and a stationery outlet. And as a kid, I grew up there, where I used to go and see the presses. And as you can imagine, the kind of equipment they had in those days is nothing like, I'm sure most people wouldn't even recognize one if they saw it today.
Heidelberg cylinders and things like that.
Cylinders and letter press, melting hot lead into little letters to do an impression on that black and white. And incredible. I mean, in terms of the actual, how can I put it, the actual type of printing that was done, it's totally different from what people are used to today. So yes, I mean, that's how I sort of got an interest into printing. Anyway, needless to say, grew up a little bit, went into university, to an American university, got back. And as I was about to start my career, I joined an advertising agency initially. And
was this in Kenya?
Yes. Okay. And things were going, you know, looking good. And then suddenly there was a coup attempt in Kenya, and there was a lot of repercussions on that. So I decided to leave the country. My father said to me that there was a lot of stability at that point. So I had a British passport, so moved to the UK in 82, and went looking for a job. And I thought, okay, what would I like to do? I was completely out there in the open, and tried for a few jobs, couldn't get anything. Finally got a job at a mid-sized printing press called Clementine, where I joined as an estimator. Interesting, because even then it was all offset printing, so there was not that thing as digital in those days. And went up through the ranks. We grew the company quite well. I mean, basically it was during the years of the Thatcher government. So things were good in the UK in the early 80s. And then really moved up the ranks and got to a point where I was general manager within 7 years. Got to know a lot about printing through that, because that was my best learning curve, because my boss was a chap called Russell Chaplin, and he was amazing. I mean, he, the most humble boss you can ever get, and gave me a lot of opportunities and taught me a lot. Anyway, did that. I got an opportunity to move into another international group to set up their, they wanted to set up a security printing plant in the in Kenya. So they made me an offer I couldn't refuse, which I took on, moved on, and finished that project off. And then I was with the group, and they had, there was an international group, and their headquarters were in London. And then this opportunity came along to come and set up something in Dubai, which I took the challenge, because obviously I came to see Dubai, and Dubai was obviously nothing like what it is today. It was a small, sleepy old town, which was a welcome change for me from the hustle and bustle of what I was used to in London with two young kids. So traveling a lot, really had no time for myself, all over the place. So when it came to Dubai, it was a great, great relief. And so it was a 2-year assignment. So I came into Dubai in 92. Started doing the assignment, finished it off, and then I decided, okay, this is a nice place to live. So started looking around to see what, and the potential for print was just staring at me in the face there, because my, one of my tasks with the group was to handle all the print for the whole group internationally. And I was leading with presses here in Dubai. And in those days, Dubai was nothing like it was is today. So saw the opportunity. Got a license, took me about 6 months. And then when I finished my assignment, I set up Atlas, which was in 94. But it started off as quite a reasonably small setup in offset, a couple of small two colors and one font four color. And, you know, it was just testing the waters, because no one knew what was going to happen in Dubai. But our success stemmed from the fact that I was, as an owner-operator, and I knew about print, I focused on quality, service, and ensuring. I mean, I had all the background in terms of estimating, production, sales. So I was all rolled up into one. Be popping out with my briefcase to visit ad agencies and clients in, with my suit on, and then come back, plan all the jobs, do all the production planning. And then slowly business started to take off. It was actually quite a harrowing couple of years initially, I must admit.
I can imagine.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was, to say the least, I mean, you're as a smaller setup, which I was in those days compared to some of the bigger family-run businesses that were here already, the edge we had was focusing on quality and service.
Yeah.
So to give you an example, I remember this is really quite a humorous story, where I said, when I went to meet an agency, and they said to me, oh, do you, I didn't have the four color presses then, and I had two colors, two colors, 202s. And they said, oh, but how are you going to manage four color? I said, are you worried about quality? They said, yeah, of course. And I said, well, to be honest, 2-on-2 is actually will produce better quality, because you give time to, for the two colors to dry before you print the other four two colors, is obviously not necessarily true, but anyway.
What we all used to say if we only had a two color press.
Yeah, needless to say, it wasn't the most efficient way of doing it, but I was determined to prove to them that we could do the jobs, and which we did. So managed to get in a few nice, good corporate clients and ad agencies. And then business started to grow slowly but surely. And I was very, very focused on, I didn't necessarily want to become the largest printing press, but I was, our tagline is always, initially the tagline was, in matters of print, when print matters. Today, it's just in matters of print. And that's it. Well, and when print matters, sorry, not in matters of print. And I would say our perception by most of our clients was they knew that we were a good setup, and we were not the largest, but once the job came in, and we had committed to a timeline, we would make sure to ensure that it got done on time and quality.
Yeah.
And And then I think it was in 96, 97 when things started to pick up in the UAE. You were here then as well. You know what happened.
I came in 2001.
Oh, of course. Sorry. Yeah. So 96, 97, the government started to encourage investment here, and they started building properties and buildings, and it just started to grow. And it was like a snowball, which just gathered so much momentum as it went. And more so, I felt confident that, okay, this was the place to be. I mean, God bless the government, I tell you. Sheikh Mohammed and his team really, really turned this country around. And the more I got positive vibes, the more I began to invest. And it was to a point where by 2001, I'd got some really good contracts in place as well. So from a small place in Garhoud near the airport road, I then decided, okay, time to take the plunge, and took some land, built a factory, invested a lot more into equipment, went into web machines, took contracts from clients like ITP and all that for printing magazines. And really, I mean, couldn't ask for more, and it just took off. But it's not as easy as I make it sound, because obviously that we had some few harrowing moments, and trying to get funding raised from banks and convincing them on the project did take some time, but luckily we managed that. And so 2001-2, we started construction on the factory in Alcoz, which we are still in today.
Yeah.
And then 2003, I realized that, okay, digital was starting to grow a little bit. Obviously, the internet wasn't as powerful as it is today. I mean, just to put it into perspective, we as a generation have gone in from telex machines to fax machines to getting, you know, the modem on the internet where you had the 56 kb modem where you dial up and wait for three minutes before you could connect, and then it would cut off, and download one page took you 5 minutes. So we've seen it all. But I then decided to start investing a little bit more into digital equipment. And my philosophy has always been that to separate ourselves from the rest of the pack, one needed to differentiate themselves in not only in terms of quality, but the kind of products and print you could provide.
Yeah.
So, for instance, the project we took on mid-2000 was the when we started the newspaper projects, printing on demand.
Yeah.
Where big investment, invested in the screen, digital presses, webs, and looked at the model where they used to import a lot of newspapers into Dubai from all over the world, because Dubai obviously had a lot of different nationalities. And with Emirates Airlines as a backbone for my as the client, I then took the plunge and changed the model completely for them, so that instead of printing the newspapers in the country of origin and then delivering them here, we turned it around and said, okay, we tied up with content providers and publishers across the globe, and they would send us the content and we would print on demand here. So it completely changed the cycle process. And till date, we're the only ones who do that here. We do over 45 newspaper titles every day on demand.
Fantastic.
And you know, with over time, I felt that, okay, offset was there. And, you know, what tends to happen in offset is Dubai is a unique place in that respect, because there's lots of money and investment coming in all the time. So everybody can afford the machinery, but not everybody necessarily has the expertise. So the bigger presses here always relied on their staff and managers, and the senior management were there, but not necessarily involved and understanding the businesses per se, whereas us as a mid-sized company, I was hands-on the business, which is very, very important. And this is one point I'd like to point out for the younger entrepreneurs, forthcoming entrepreneurs, is that you've really got to know your business before you take the plunge, because you got to know more than all your staff put together, because that's the only way you can lead. If you feel that you're going to let managers run the business and you'll just sit back and do the financials, it's fine for the big MNCs, but not for the SMEs.
Yeah. So, which is why I found you at a trade show, wasn't it, in January?
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
And it also has a lot, I guess, to do with passion for the business. I mean, I enjoy print. I suppose ink runs in my blood, as they say. I love the smell of the chemicals when I walk through the factory in those days, obviously. Today, we're a completely different setup. So, yeah, everything was going hunky-dory. We grew extremely fast over the next 7-10 years. Did lots more investment and became reasonably big in size. But one thing I did notice was from 2008, we had the financial crisis. We got through that luckily because we were not that big and we were not that leveraged. But 2014 onwards, I could see that magazines, newspapers, books per se, everything was beginning to reduce in size. And every time contracts came up for renewal, we were dropping our prices, competition had increased, and quantities were going down and down. So the profitability of those particular verticals was beginning to degrade. But having been so vested into all this equipment, as you know, printing equipment isn't the cheapest or the smallest in the world. One tends to become a little, complacent. I mean, you don't really rush out to change the model. And we stuck it out. I mean, obviously, it wasn't the greatest vertical to be in, but, you know, I had two heat set webs, loads of sheet fed presses, 5 colors, 8 colors, 4 colors. And the thought of having them lying empty without any work was our biggest, fear. Yeah. Printing machines like a plane. Every hour it stands idle, it's costing you money. Yeah. So you would have to take on jobs at ridiculously low pricing in those days just to keep them running. And then the payment terms are obviously not the best. So in 2019 end, when COVID suddenly hit us, nobody realized the implications of that, and nobody knew how long it was going to last. And obviously, it took the world by storm. We obviously got hit. And in March 2020, my three main sectors we had focused on was airlines, exhibitions, and publishing. So that accounted for over 60-65% of our turnover. And in 1 month, they all shut down, March 2020. And that was like a kick in the stomach, because to lose 60-odd% of your business in 1 month with no idea of when it would come back. You know, nobody anticipated whether it would last a month, 2 months, 6 months, you know, eventually lasted just over a year and a half. And we were a fairly large setup by that time. So I stuck it out for a few months, a couple of months. You obviously put people, I mean, in UAE, you don't get the government financial support like you do in the UK or whatever.
Yeah.
So after a couple of months of sleepless nights and trying to get to grips with where to go next, I decided to completely turn the business around and started looking around. And obviously, I had a lot of time on my hands sitting at home twiddling my thumbs and waiting for this to end. And in August 2020, I then decided, okay, it was now time to change the whole company and reinvent the company. So what I did was started offloading all the offset equipment. The legacy equipment was all paid for anyway. But I said, you know, now this is the strongest message I'm ever going to get. And it's, if I don't do it now, you do or die. And as it is, we could see that the numbers were dropping. And even if it did come back, I could sense that it would never get back to what it was before COVID.
Yeah.
So by the grace of God, I managed to offload majority of the equipment. And in 18 months, I divested myself out of all the offset equipment we had, including some new offset equipment we had procured about 4 or 5 years prior to that. and reinvest it back into digital. And the idea, and one thing, by the way, I forgot to mention was prior to COVID, we were always focused on B2B. We never looked at B2C. During these 18 months, 2 years, my idea changed that we had to develop the B2C market with the access to internet online ordering and everything else. And my daughter, who had just graduated and been with me for a few years, decided to push through that and took charge of the e-commerce side of our business. So we launched an e-commerce site called Prince Souk and registered the trademark and invested quite heavily into developing that e-commerce portal. Took us about 18 months on that time as well. And it was a slow start initially, but it just opened up a new revenue stream for us. It wasn't big initially, but it's growing now at a rapid pace. And Dubai being the retail capital of the Middle East, I looked at that and I said, okay, so we're in the right place. We have the factories, we have where they were. So what would one, what is poised to grow? And I felt retail merchandising is something that would grow. Newspapers were already there. Even Emirates Airlines then eventually came back to the newspapers that, that stopped. Books on demand. So I did a lot of research into that, tied up with companies like CPI and all that in the UK. And went, we created four different lines of business. So UAE had put a ban on plastic bags. So I invested into a shopping bag making machine with craft paper, which is eco-friendly. Invested into rigid box making machines for the white format for retail branding, as well as print on demand, obviously for books, for academic books. And today, I'm happy to say that those markets are proving to be the best decisions I ever made because they're all on a growth trajectory and we don't have to fear them being wiped out by the internet because this is all something that will only grow as UAE, and UAE is growing again back at a phenomenal rate. Yeah. So, yes, so I feel we're in the right space now. Took 18 months and a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. But yep, we're back on the form again. So yes, that's in a nutshell, without going into too much detail, is where we are today.
Where you are today, and it's a classic example, isn't it, of not. There's two things that I'm reminded of from time to time, which is staying in the game. Someone said to me recently about the cricket and the 5-day test cricket sort of thing. Sometimes it's not about winning, it's about not losing. You're back up there, you're batting every day, you're in the game, you're still breathing, you're still alive. You can then pivot, you can do other things, but getting your house in order and getting yourself into a position where you could respond to imposed change of circumstances, I think from the sounds of it, is one of the messages would be, don't be afraid of reinventing yourself, take stock, look out for other opportunities, like you say, be very passionate and be personally involved.
Yes, I mean, that's one strong philosophy I believe in, is what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And after 30 odd years of being in the business, I'd be damned if I'd let the business die. It's not only about myself, but you've got to understand that we had carved out a nice niche in the market. We had a reputation which was quite good, still is, hopefully. And you have staff working for you who've been loyal. So, you can't just suddenly decide, to shut shop and walk away. It would have been, to me, a failure if I'd done that. I mean, although the company grew and saw it through the good times, I now had to be there for the company through the bad times and make sure that, and obviously it was a bit gut-wrenching as well when we had to downsize as well a little bit, where people who had been with me for quite a long time were all basically offset, old-fashioned, not old-fashioned, but offset-based, and to make them understand this model. I mean, I remember the shock and horror on some of the guys in my production team when I went down and said, okay, guys, time for a change. And I had to break it to them that this is what my plans were. And they just looked at me as if I'd lost my rocker. They said, are you serious? And I said, listen, you know, you cannot just continue the way we are because it's not going to grow. No, but, you know, we're known and this is all we've done. And I said, that's exactly right. You know, this is all we've done. Now we need to look at a new phase in our life. You know, we've been, it's hit us all of a sudden, which sometimes is a blessing as well. Yeah. Because you do tend to become a little complacent when things are running well. It's only when you suddenly get hit hard. And a lot of people perhaps wouldn't have taken the plunge. I mean, I know loads of presses, which the larger ones as well, and a lot of the smaller ones more primarily because of lack of funding, and bigger ones, lack of knowledge, I guess. They just stuck to what they did. And are in not a very good position right now.
Yeah.
So to me, I gave myself, I stepped back into, I was a little bit removed for some time before COVID and taken a step back, but got back into the seat, hot seat, took charge, and also reinvested in a lot of new employees who were well versed in the digital space, print. So these guys have also taught me a lot. So at my age, I had to sort of sit with them, and I'm actually learning from them as well every day, you know, because they have some terrific ideas, and they're probably more attuned to the new generation that's growing up, from the millennials and the generation Y or Z, I forget which one.
Z's and alphas and yeah.
Yeah. So you know, the philosophy of you can't teach an old dog new tricks is not true. You have to learn, otherwise you don't survive. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, we you know, I think attitude has a lot to do with it. Strength in terms of mental capacity to be an entrepreneur requires a lot of resilience, lots of resilience. And when you know that the buck stops with you, there's no more any support or government support or anything that's going to bail you out, you tend to become a little bit more incisive in your thinking as well as the decision making.
And you also, I was saying to somebody yesterday, you've got to be very good at partitioning your mind, haven't you? Because on the one you know, topic, your brain is battling, say, with cash flow or changing market conditions, but then on the other hand, you're holding conversations with people about today and ongoing stuff. So you can't allow the edges to blur, can you? You've got to be very good at being mentally focused on several sets at the same time.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I'm actively involved now in the operations of the business because our business model has changed so much. Now, gone are the days of where you had magazine contracts and you could sign a contract and then everything just rolls on auto. Every job is different. We focus very much on high quality, short run collateral. So be it rigid boxes, we've invested a lot into new digital embellishment equipment. We have five different types of digital ink processes that we work on, being toner, obviously UV, water-based, electrostatic magnetic inks with the indigo, gel inks with Canon. So what we're able to do now is print on any kind of substrate, be it wood, aluminum, plastic, whatever it is, apart from paper. So that opens up a lot more avenues because people today want all aspects of print. Print hasn't died. It's just evolved into another format. And especially when we launched PrintSouq, we found that the SKUs we had, we're loading on an average of about 50 SKUs a day, every day on that site. And it's endless, from photo frames to books to yoga mats, printing yoga mats, personalized yoga mats. And the nice thing about that model is the fact that it's all cash. You swipe it, but the thing is, it's all time sensitive and you've got to use it. And there's no MOQs on that. But top line may drop, but your bottom line definitely gets a little better. and obviously your cash flow. And I also had, I mean, during, I forgot to mention that earlier on, that luckily, obviously, over the years, we had built up a little bit of a reserve. So I had to bring all the money back into the business. Business has paid me till now, and now it was time for me to pay back. So whereas a lot of people may have been reluctant to do that, I said, no, we need to get back into this. So brought a lot of my personal funds back into the business to sustain us during that lean time, which we had for about a year and a half. Because it does take time. It doesn't just jumpstart, getting a reputation, learning new lines. Rigid boxes were a completely different new line for me. Yeah. The different facets of that, getting the materials, getting that, and exciting. I must say that I'm very charged up right now.
But, that's lovely.
But it's also, you know, you make a few mistakes along the way. But today we know the business pretty much. Yeah. So we tend to pitch ourselves as we're not the cheapest. We're not here to compete against if you find a cheaper price. We're a one-stop solution. I always tell my staff that you're not selling print anymore. You're selling solutions. Yeah. When we talk to somebody, talk to them about the project, look at their pain points, look at what they could do better and there, because they're running their businesses. If you're a clothesline retailer, you have your different pain points. Well, how can we support you in that respect? Like what we did for Emirates Airlines for the newspapers and now for universities and schools on book on demand, you know, where, we've introduced models which have extremely, even they couldn't believe that we could do that. So to give you an example, there was an academic publisher who used to print in India and China, and they used to print books by the thousands. For this region, for the GCC region. And then they had warehousing in each and every country, Oman, Qatar, Bahrain, Saudi, where they would ship all the books and keep them in stock and then distribute from there through distributors. Obviously, price of production of a book in that respect was cheaper, but what they forget about is the other hidden costs, like warehousing, staffing, obsolete stock, cash flow. And by the time you added all that up, it was also our job to educate the customers, to tell them, look guys, you know, you might be paying X and we are charging you Y, but at least in Y you're not paying, you know, you're exactly what your cost is, whereas in X you don't, because all those hidden costs get lost in the process. And it's at the end of the year when you find out suddenly that, oh my god, our warehousing cost in XYZ is killing this thing, and we've got so much dead stock lying around. So we introduced the model of print-on for them, and now what they do is they literally place orders with us every 7 to 10 days, 14 days, where they send us the whole list of titles. They've got over 3,000 SKUs in terms of titles. And they can turn around and say, okay, we have 342 for Oman, 65 for Sharjah, 720 for Saudi, blah, blah, blah. Literally, we print, pack, keep it ready. The courier servant comes in, picks it up, and it's gone. And they know that they haven't ordered one extra book than more than the need, and which at the end of the day has made their profitability better as well, because now they're only paying for what they use, not in anticipation of what they might sell.
Yeah, and they can keep all the content bang up to date, can't they? Because they can just update the files with you.
Yeah.
If there's any text changes or anything or content changes at all. Yeah.
But it's also software driven as well, yeah, Marcus, because we've invested heavily into softwares as well.
Okay.
So variable data softwares, personalization softwares, that is also a key factor in this. I mean, we do examination papers, for instance, where we can print examination papers with the student's name, randomizing questions, doing the kind of personalization that wasn't possible before.
Clever. And if I'm not mistaken, and not saying anything out of school here, you're also with this model able to look at other parts of the region, e.g. Saudi Arabia, perhaps. I think when you and I met in Saudi, we were talking about future plans there. Any announcements you want to make on this podcast, Amit? about.
Yeah, well, after we met, by the grace of God, I was in Saudi for 5 days and finally got my residence permit and my licensing and all that approved. So, yes, we are opening up in Riyadh in the next 2 to 3 months. We just I'll be back in Saudi next week to finalize on, thank you, on the warehousing and whatever. The idea now is a hub and smoke model rather than trying to have one big factory and trying, because freight costs and all that are not necessary anymore, especially for the B2C side. So what we are doing is we're going to set up smaller production units geographically spread out in the region. Yeah. And we are focused only on the GCC at the moment, nowhere else, because that is a big enough market right now for us to target. There's nobody else. There are companies who do that, but I think we're a little bit ahead in the game. So we will open in Riyadh. The plan is to open up another couple of centers, maybe in Jeddah or Dammam, then go on to Qatar. Bahrain is not too far away, so we wouldn't probably go there. And then Oman eventually, and maybe another couple in the UAE, like Abu Dhabi and whatever. But smaller production units. Atlas's head office is where I'm sitting right now. We're in a very fortunate position here. So the biggest stuff, if necessary, we can still handle it out of here. But the print-on-demand stuff where people need it literally in 24, 48 hours would be the model to create. And we have it then a network. And we've also invested a lot into software for that side because we've tied up with a software company that allows us to monitor production. You know, jobs are coming online and they're just being downloaded. The SO get the order gets produced, goes, it gets allocated to a machine. I can at a glance find out exactly what production is going on, which machines are running, which are not. That also gives me feedback for my future investments. But the idea is to once we tie up with specific suppliers, we will not then chop and change. We just duplicate those models across the region.
And that also helps with the hot topic at the moment of things like tariffs and import duties and stuff like that, doesn't it? In terms of having your satellite manufacturing in different places. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I think we're one of the few industries that are able to do that because obviously with the advent of internet and how fast it is. Also, the fact is a lot of countries are quite keen on working with local suppliers, especially government bodies. So they're not necessarily happy. I mean, Saudi would rather give preference to a Saudi company as opposed to a Dubai company. Sure. And also, they have been given an agenda. So when you build up a big, our focus is B2C, but B2B is still a big part of our business. So the idea is to lock in with specific large MNCs as well as government bodies. Those tied you through on a day-to-day basis because, you know, the work's going to keep on coming in every day. And then developing the B2C market where, you know, the population in Saudi is a very young population. They are, I mean, the country's changed dramatically, you know. I mean, it's, we never even looked at Saudi up till about 2 years ago. And today, in my opinion, if it goes according to what they're planning with their Vision 2030, I think it'll be a substantial market to focus on as well. But it's not easy to set up there.
Definitely. I think so. Isn't it the population is something like either 32 or 36 million and 70% of that is under 30 years old?
Yeah.
Yes, it is. Yeah. And with all the things such as all the events, all the outdoor things now that involve high-end retail and restaurants and leisure and entertainment, there's so much POSM. There's so much event material, you name it. It's great times.
Like I told you, the attitude and the mindset of the younger generation is incredible there as well. I mean, UAE's obviously had a lot of time to, for the last 20 odd years, to evolve into what it is today. Saudi obviously wants to reach it in less than 7 to 10 years, which I believe they could if they want to. I mean, it's going to take a lot of hard work, but the amount of infrastructure and the Saudi is a big country, right? I mean, at the end of the day. So you've got to be where the action is. And that's why we said that rather than trying to service a country as big as that with one major center, it's easier to set it up in smaller centers across and be there to literally supply. And whatever you can't do from there, you still got the backup of the Dubai operations to support them if you need. We also have good tie-ups with other companies in Saudi, larger offset printing houses and all that. What they tend to lack is the marketing skills. So,
yeah,
you know, at the end of the day, if the customer doesn't know what you're capable of, it's a bit difficult to try and sell them. It's not like you're selling a product, you're selling a service. The print is not a product, print is a service.
Yeah.
So how do you explain? And you don't expect your end user to understand what is possible and what isn't unless you explain it to them. So it's an uphill task right now. I suppose it'll, and now with AI coming onto the scene, my God, I'm really excited.
That was about my question. That was going to be my question with your thought leadership hat on, Amit. People in the industry watch what you do and follow you. What's your thoughts on AI?
Well, I actually had a podcast with some of the team. There's a thing now that they've launched, the FESPA team have launched a thing called ChatGCC, and I'm one of the podcast speakers. And we had a conversation about this a couple of weeks ago. AI, to me, is a game changer, an absolute game changer. Will it put people out of work? No, but it will definitely make you more efficient and makes your life a lot more simpler. I think what AI will do for print is enable creativity. I mean, it's already there on the internet where people are producing videos and whatever, but AI will allow you to manage your data a lot more effectively, target audiences. As a print house today, you're not only just printing ink. One of the things which I'm considering right now we call ourselves as a PSP, print service provider, but we will also then work with these corporations to try and say, who do you want to target? And then accordingly develop products. With a classic example right now, we're working with an organization out of the UK where they want to launch brands across the UAE, clothing brands, which are aimed at what they call lifestyle, premium, and luxury. But they have no clue. And I told them Dubai doesn't necessarily have the databases that perhaps the UK or Europe does, but it will come. But that's where you can now start targeting clients. And we work with these kind of organizations because they rely on us to say, okay, can you handle the print on demand and the distribution? And which we will. So that customers, I mean, their clients, who could be a small boutique manufacturer of designer clothing or lifestyle clothing, who do not have a presence in the UAE because of costs and the turnover that they require to sustain themselves, are able to now target this market working with people like us.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? So basically, we enable them to say, okay, these are the areas to target for your lifestyle brands. These are the areas to target for your premium brands. Get a printed brochure. If necessary, if it's really premium or luxury, even personalize the brochures.
Yeah.
I mean, today, you know, if somebody gets a brochure personalized and then allows them to say, okay, here's a 15% discount, go onto the website and order your stuff, then they handle the logistics of it once it's ordered. But we get the message across on their behalf, because despite what everybody says about the internet and the ads on YouTube and whatever, it's been proven that they're not as effective. If anything, they're more of an irritant today to most viewers, because when this ad, which is what I call intrusive advertising, suddenly pops up when you're in the middle of a video, it's you know, you can't wait for 3 seconds before you skip it. And that's
exactly.
Yeah,
and the other thing that we notice here as well, Amit, is that there was a point where direct mail was so intrusive in your home and there was so much of it that people stopped responding to it. So it stopped becoming an effective tool, and then the internet could break in and replace that. Whereas now, if you actually do get a well-crafted piece of direct mail arrive at home, there's a very large chance someone will look at it because there isn't that much. I got something from my telco the other day saying that you've now got this service that you can buy in your area now. And it even had my address on it and a map and a pin on it, which had all been done with variable data printing. And yeah, it's very compelling. It's very clever. So it's coming full circle, I think.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's not applicable to every sort of business. Obviously, if you're selling basic commodities, then you're still better off, you know, to get your brand across on the internet and just create brand awareness and prospect a deal. I believe it's more targeted. I mean, UAE is a pretty small country with a population of no more than 8, 9 million, 10 million. So there is a vast opportunity here for us because luxury is a given here. A premium is also a given. Lifestyle is also a big growth business. So I feel that if somebody, the consumer will feel that this company has taken the trouble to print a brochure with things which they feel would be appropriate for my consumption, then they will take that a little bit of extra time. They will not necessarily chuck it away, if you know what I mean, especially if it's printed nice.
Yeah, and there's there's versions, isn't there? For instance, if they're going to send you a brochure on clothing, then they're going to show male models wearing male clothes. But if it's going to your wife or your daughter, it will have pictures which are focused on ladies. So it's going to be a more effective tool.
We'll also localize the languages because certain brochures will be in Arabic, certain will be in English, so that they feel that they've taken the time to understand that, okay, this is, you know, a preference of language is Arabic, so why not? I think with the internet, I mean, it'll never go away, but print has to go hand in hand with internet. That's what I'm trying to get to here.
Yeah.
Is
cross-media.
There's nothing like a nice, simple example I'll tell you, which is something we're pitching is as well as luxury cars. Okay, today if you're going to be spending a couple of $100,000 on a luxury car, traditionally what they had was tons of brochures printed and they would just give you one and you'd walk away with it and then whatever. Now we have the ability to say to them that, okay, create a montage of all your interior fit outs, interior seat colors, exterior colors. And then when a customer walks in, you're obviously going to take all their details down, correct? What kind of preference on color, what kind of... Can you imagine that chap may not make a decision then, but 2 days later, through a courier, he gets a brochure delivered to his house, which shows the kind a Ferrari in red with the kind of seats he liked and his name on the number plate parked outside. It can be a 16-page brochure.
Yeah.
He may not buy the car, but I can guarantee you he won't throw that brochure away.
Yeah. And it's very compelling. People will come back to it. They won't throw it away. They might come back and buy the car in 6 months. And the use of, like you say, versioning, personalization, cross-media, print does go hand in hand. And it's not, it sort of almost disappeared and is now coming back and has impacts in people's lives. It definitely does. Yeah.
And this also gives them the ability that when you're giving today there are so many fake ads as well on things like Facebook and all that, where they, you know, you may not necessarily trust the company and be a little worried about placing an order on that. However, at the end of the day, the if it's a printed brochure and you've got the website and you've got everything about the company, like I said, once you switch off the laptop, it's gone. You won't remember it. Whereas with this, you may say, okay, yeah, sounds interesting. Maybe I'll, you know, we are getting a 30% off and I've got 30 days to decide. You may not do it, but it still gives you time to take a breather and think about it rather than trying to make a decision on the spot.
Yeah. So if you were to roll up and encapsulate in a short thought, your experiences since your granddad's printing press back in Kenya through to today and some of the things you've taken, what would you say to your grandson, for instance, if he's thinking of coming into the business? What would, few wise words from Amit as a passing shot.
If he does get into the business, all I can say to him is it won't be anything like what it is today, 30 years down the line, guaranteed. Because AI will rule the world. And yes, print will never die because branding and advertising has to stay, you know, whether it's on the street sign or whether it's in a shop or whatever you go in. However, with the advent of online ordering and whatever, it'll be a completely different business. So, I mean, we've been fortunate enough to see such a from black and white televisions and telex machines to what we are today, I can't even understand what they will see in the next 30 years, and either you or I, you know, will be able to see it in the end after that time. But all I can say to him is, for the younger generation, all I would tell him is have an open mindset and don't close yourself up on the what we do. Look at the opportunities outside the scope and learn. That's where education kicks in. You don't necessarily need to go to print school, but you need to have an awareness. And as well today with social media and TikTok and all that, there's a lot of learning potential. So all I would say to him is, you know, I mean, learn and understand where the world is going, because it will not be anything like this 30 years down the line, guaranteed. And world powers who are there today may not necessarily be there 30 years down the line. So be ready for anything, because in today's day and age, the pace is too fast to sort of even predict what they're going to go through. I actually feel quite sorry for the new generation, because it's been going to be a far more competitive world.
Yeah. I'm on record as saying that I think the times that we live in at the moment are, certainly if we talk about print and packaging, one of the most exciting times for our industry that it's ever been, you know, with all this change and all this opportunity and variety. It's certainly very stimulating, isn't it? There's nothing humdrum about it. Trying to stay abreast, trying to spot the opportunities, and you talking about advice. Another podcast guest we were talking to recently said about curiosity, being curious, and I think that's a good thing, because out of that curiosity, you, as you say, you go to shows, you see new things, you take on board new ideas. The world's changing. How can we embrace it? How can we build solutions? Your digital back end enables you to do just that. So it's exciting times.
I think that curiosity only stems when you have a passion. Curiosity is there, but at the end of the day, you need to have an interest and a passion and be hands-on. You know, who would have thought that today when you walk into a printing house and you've been to ours and you see it doesn't look like a traditional print house at all. But just success factor, I think, stems in the fact, especially very relevant in today's day and age, is being two steps ahead of the competition. Simple. You need to think, okay, where now? Where to now? Where are we going? Not just sit on that thing and keep on, you know, if something's there and dead and buried and you keep on slogging it, it's not going to grow anymore.
It's not
going to change. So, you know, it's important to always have a 5-year in your mind. What do you see the world evolving into? And you'll never get it right, but at least you can start heading in the right direction.
Yeah.
Fall over a few times and dust off and carry on again.
A successful person is known by the number of mistakes they make. I mean, you were saying earlier on, I've made some errors and so on. Yeah, haven't we all? And it's very easy to be an ostrich or something, stick your head in the sand and say, I'm not going to do anything, therefore I won't make any mistakes. Or yeah, push out there, try again, keep on trying, be persistent, be curious.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Again, your team will make a lot of difference. You know, you've got to have forward-thinking teams who are excited by the business as well. Today, I don't employ people who necessarily with a print background anymore. To me, digital printing is not rocket science, but it's understanding what can we do with what we have to invest in to make it a lot more efficient and comfortable for our clients. That's the way to grow.
Yeah, and as an investor yourself and as a shareholder, you understandably want to see the best return coming out of that investment, and those people that can come to you and do that or show you the way or take you into new areas where that investment will evolve and get bigger and bigger for you are worth their weight in gold, really. And that's what we do. You know, we provide those people to our clients. It is a changing marketplace. Sustainability, AI, digital, you name it. And I say to all candidates, they need to reinvent themselves. They need to show how they add value to their employers in terms of being able to be proactive and think outside of the box.
Yeah. Sustainability is a very, very key issue, by the way. I forgot to mention it. That's what we focus on as well, because in today's day and world, sustainability is such an important aspect of the whole growth factor, especially when you're working with large corporates as well as the government bodies, because everybody has this agenda that they have to be seen to be going green. Yeah. Some may only be doing it for marketing reasons. There are companies that are very, very pro sustainable. So the equipment also that we invest in is also very sustainable in terms of production terms. So we're able to prove to them that, you know, we're not really endangering the environment. I mean, to give you an example, I think I mentioned this earlier, that our whole factory runs on solar power. I had this fitted in end of last year. At beginning of last year, sorry. And during the daytime, because our power requirements of digital equipment is not as high as what it was initially. So yeah, we've reduced. In fact, we sell electricity back to Diwa here, to buy electricity and water. But well, that's done. Again. Yeah, so that's a plus point for us as well.
Well done on that, Amit. Well done. And yeah, you're right. I mean, major brands and major multinationals are very much under pressure, we know, from consumers, and they are pushing that pressure right down the supply chain, including the print service providers and the converters for packaging and all that. And you are obliged to demonstrate that you conform to scope one and scope two and eventually scope three, so that they can show the compliance as well. So the fact that you're on that and ahead of the game is brilliant and amazing.
Yeah. Thank you. And like I said, the other thing is now with the growth factor into this part of the world, where a lot of European and English companies and obviously some from the US are coming in here, they are also moving a lot of their, what they used to traditionally print in their home countries, to this part of the world. Yeah. And this perception that, you know, nobody can do it like us is gone. Because when they come here and they see the kind of setups that are running in the UAE, it's mind-boggling for them, and they say, wow, okay, so this is the place to be. So, yeah, and I think location for Dubai is terrific, because we've got subcontinent on this side, we've got the whole Middle East and GCC, North Africa next to us, we've got Africa, especially East Africa and the Indian Ocean islands. So, yeah, we just want to become specialists in this part of the world, because there are companies that do what we do in other parts of the world, not necessarily here. Yeah. So we want to become the go-to for this part of the world.
Well, I'm looking forward to recording our next podcast and segment in a while when you're further down the line with that. And then it will be a case of not what we want, but what we're already doing. Between now and then, Amit, thank you very much for your time today. Very, very helpful and informative, inspirational. Insightful, and I know our audience are going to enjoy it a lot.
Thank you very much,
Amit, and continue with your great stuff. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Bye. Thank you. Bye bye.